book, film, and restaurant reviews and deep discussions of the benefits of veganism.
For humans and non-humans alike, Wednesdays from 5:30 till 6 p.m. The Real Issue, hosted by Sue Hildebrand, digs into topics ranging from elections to environmental protection.
From social justice to economic justice, from the local to the global.
We cover the political part of everything. Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m.
Thanks for listening to
Get the Power Radio.
All right, what a great show. Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, magic word vegan, and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. They're located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're made possible by Log Arrow Marketing Services, helping businesses, associations, and nonprofits stand out with outside-the-box promotional products. Whether it's branded apparel for your staff or an event, or promotional products with a purpose, Log Arrow tailors programs to meet its clients' needs. To learn how Log Arrow can help your organization through target marketing, visit logarrow.com or call 355-8685. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. And I just want to point out, there is now a tip jar on the KZFR website that you can use to donate directly via the Tip Talk button. And you can go ahead and support all the great public affairs programming that happened between the 5 o'clock and 7 o'clock hour. I'm Jeannie Trezino. I'm your co-host.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about this week's farm-to-table issue of the Chico News and Review. And then we'll talk about the story we would have preferred they had written about veganic farming. What's that, you ask? Well, hold your manure. We'll tell you. Over to you, Jeannie.
This week was the second annual farm-to-table issue of the Chico News and Review, and sadly, all the editor decided to promote were meat producers and a butcher. The authors dove deep into all the excuses one needs to celebrate and justify killing something that is completely unnecessary, which is killing animals for food.
I think excuses is kind of a harsh word. Maybe moral sophistry would work.
Okay. I'll go with that. To ease the pain a little bit, sure. These feel-good stories are designed to convince you, the reading public, that animal farming can be humane. If you eat animals, and if you stop at all to pause about your actions at all, and I realize a lot of people don't stop to pause, but if you do stop to pause at all, you may be anxious to find a way to justify your complicity and to ease your guilt about the slaughter of those animals. Or you might be trying to convince yourself that the way these animals taste is worth killing them. You need to do this because you have to differentiate these sentient, emotional, and loving animals as being different from your pet dog or cat. The stories in this week's News and Review are designed to do this thinking for you, or to keep you from thinking on your own in ways other than that. The way these articles are framed also reinforces the notion that you have to have some kind of superhuman degree of willpower to go vegan and forego the amazing gustatory pleasures of eating meat, which is to say, to decide not to kill anyone or have anyone killed for you. There's a quote from Susan Zangrilli, who's one of the co-founders of the Turkey Tail Farm that's featured in this issue. The article is, I would say, hypocritically titled, Honoring the Animal. The quote begins, Cheetah, Chudy, and I really chose to be farmers so we can provide a healthy option for our community members when it comes to meat. A healthy product that's been humanely raised, because so much of our meat today is adulterated and produced not in a loving or caring way. We honor the process of nature and the life of the animal and hope it creates nutrient-rich meat for our community members.
Because, you know, so much. The process of nature is, of course, to produce nutrient-rich meat for humans.
Exactly. As if the process of nature is designed to sustain 7 billion humans on this planet.
Right.
When a meat eater refers to a healthy product, she is using a euphemism to refer to non-human animals, the flesh of non-human animals. And when a meat eater refers to honoring the process of nature and raising animals in a loving or caring way, I have to ask, in what way is killing a healthy animal loving or caring? To go further on the idea of honoring the animal, there is this sense that you, the meat eater, are not partaking of this animal's body in a trivial way. You're doing it for a serious reason. There is an implied sort of unavoidable need to consume the animal's body, and there is an unspoken inherent apology to the corpse, right? You're apologizing to the corpse or to the spirit of the corpse that takes the form of having a sense of honoring that body. You promise that you have not taken that life for a trivial reason.
Because taste is far from trivial, right?
Exactly, right? Like, what can be more trivial? However, in 2017, in the developed world, and having listened to Non-Human Radio week after week, therein lies the rub. Killing someone to eat them is a trivial pursuit, I believe, because there are alternatives to that. We talk about alternatives all the time on Non-Human Radio. And let's not forget that the animal is dead, right? An apology for their taking their spirit does not in any way alter that fact or affect what has occurred, nor is the animal, who is now dead, in any position to appreciate your apology or your spiritual honoring, right? So who are you apologizing to?
Right.
So, anyway, the omnivore's real dilemma, which is riffing off of Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma, that pretty well-read book, is whether or not to deny that every excuse you use to justify continuing to eat animals, whether that you say it's your culture or because we're smarter than the animal is, which is, of course, based on our own perceptions of intelligence, or just because we can, or because God told us to, or because we need to for our health, which in most cases we don't, if not all cases, all those will collapse the moment we add one more factor to this way of thinking, and that is ethics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every usage of a non-human animal, regardless of how she was raised or fed, will end in her death at the hands of another, at that other's convenience, and in a way that the other has chosen. There is simply no way to call that scenario humane slaughter, right? And there's simply no way to avoid that we are that other. We are the inexorable other, whether it's in this mode of raising and killing animals to eat, or whether it's our food choices or lifestyle choices that cause extreme environmental degradation, all of that. We are this enormous other on this planet. And so I feel that our mission here on Non-Human Radio is never to help animal exploiters devise better ways to raise and slaughter non-human animals, or to approve of better ways to do so. Certainly we've talked about it. We've talked about the cage-free, egg-laying changes that are going on in the egg industry. But I think at our baseline has always been those are just stepping stones, and that the individual consumer may have a long path to go vegan, but that path should end somewhere at veganism. So we hope to educate you. We hope to educate as many people as we can by example, by explanation, and maybe by more direct ways, by some of the harsh language I'm using here on today's show, and that we hope that you'll choose to become vegans. No one can make you do that.
And I think, you know, if you look at the market for this, quote, humane meat, and folks out that are buying it, and consuming it, you're coming from good intentions. So you've already thought about this and thought about the impact and the cruelty, so you're trying to do a better job. However, what we're trying to illuminate here is that, you know, however you want to put it, the animal is still getting killed so you can have something tasty to eat. So while, you know, some of this humane washing, for lack of a better word, you know, it all ends in death. It's kind of like, in human terms, it would be, you know, getting punched in the face 100 times or 99 times. What difference does it make? It's still pretty brutal. So I do understand where people are coming from, and we'd encourage you to kind of listen to the show and to other information to see why we have our stance on this.
I'm going to go on with another quote from the News Interview article titled Hog Heaven, about Massa Organics, which is a rice, almond, and pig farm that sells its products at around the North State at farmers markets and also up in the Bay Area. Clearly, this is, you know, when you talk about more high-end products, this is not an inexpensive product.
Yeah, I don't know, you know. We ought to look at the market for, you know, humane meat in Idaho and, you know, Alabama and places like that.
We can actually start to do that just by looking at the percentage of shelf space or freezer space in our local supermarket.
Our point being, it's really sort of an elitist approach anyway, because the cost is so much to basically assuage some guilt.
Anyway, the quote from the article is that I want to focus on is, quote, commercial pigs reach market size in just 6 months, but these pigs take nearly a year and on average are not as big as their commercial counterparts. The payoff, however, is huge. The meat from these pigs is intensely flavorful. The writer goes on to quote one of the ranch's owners, Raquel Cratch, saying, quote, we wouldn't eat meat at all unless we knew it had been raised to certain standards. It tastes so much better, end quote. Oh, and she's like almost there, right? We wouldn't eat meat at all, right? Except it tastes so much better. Mm. So what standards are those, right? They use taste as the justification for raising a sentient being for 1 year and then slaughtering him or her. They would not use the same justification to raise a dog for a year and then kill her, would you? Right? Why is a pig less worthy than a dog? If you've listened to this show at all, you will know that there's no measurement by which a pig is not as worthy as a dog, except that the dog is known to humans as a pet and the other as food. This is the reality, though. We want desperately to talk ourselves out of it. Killing sentient beings without necessity is morally unjustifiable. Taste is not, at its baseline, a necessity.
It's kind of, you know, if you had to kill the guy at the 7-Eleven to get your Twinkies, could you justify it? Because you really want those Twinkies. They taste better when he screams behind the counter, right? I mean, that's kind of the theory with, like, halal meat, right? You slaughter it live, it tastes better, or it's purer. When you kind of deconstruct it into less familiar nouns and words, you can see it doesn't make much sense.
I must say, you were very good at raising very vivid images in people's minds. I hope people remember that the next time they pick up a package of bacon and sort of compare it to someone behind a 7-Eleven counter screaming. So as humans, I think we have an obligation to align our actions with what we know to be true about non-human animals, right? We now know that they are, and every time we go to measure intelligence or emotion, we find it. Even in fish, we find it. We had Jonathan Balcom discuss Jonathan Balcom's book, What a Fish Knows, a number of months ago. So, yeah, I think in this farm-to-table issue, we see the farmed animal issue being reframed in a way such that the only real problem with eating animals, these articles tell the public, is the abuse inherent to factory farming. Therefore, the argument continues, the solution is to make ourselves feel better by producing and consuming happy meat, animals that lead such good lives that we humans don't mind killing them for food. But guess what? The animals mind very much, no matter how happy their lives were. These articles invite us to hypnotize ourselves and kind of partake of this PR razzle dazzle. I was talking earlier about this issue, and it could have been set up as like a pamphlet for Butte County meat tour or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I read the News and Review all the time. I like it. This is not necessarily, you know, this is not meant to be an attack at them. It's just like this, like as Jeannie said, these articles could have been sponsored right there by, you know, the organic meat industry. They didn't seem to go very far to look at balance or to dig deeper into anything about the environmental impact or anything other than, hey, you know, farmers and happy meat are great. So it wasn't, you know, we are in an agriculture area. I don't necessarily expect more, but it would have been good to drill a little deeper.
I think journalistically, yeah, it was sort of a really shallow look at agriculture in as a whole and in Butte County in particular. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the compassion, according to the farmers featured in the Newsroom Review, means just not factory farming. It just means it was right. Sort of killing more softly, supporting a brand delivered with the promise of a precisely regulated and approved amount of suffering, right? Just a little bit of suffering on the last day, and it's okay.
And none of these farms slaughter their own animals, you know, and some of that is by law that either has to go out to the USDA facilities or you got to call somebody in to do it for you. So it's also very disingenuous to say you're, you know, so heavily involved with them. I somehow doubt they sit there as 50 cows get slaughtered in a row and honor them individually as they go by.
I'm sure. But who knows? Anyway, yeah, so I wanted to bring up, there's a longtime animal activist and a producer of a great animal rights movie called Peaceable Kingdom. His name is James Levesque, and he calls this type of approach towards happy meat, he calls it cutthroat compassion. And I think that everyone, you know, we need to consider that the possibility that our choices, however well-motivated, well-intentioned, may have unintended consequences that you really don't buy into. So, yeah, and I want to close with an excerpt from an essay by James Levesque on this so-called issue of humane meat. And he says, quote, "Let us not forget there is a reason why human rights groups do not develop or endorse humane methods of torturing and executing political prisoners, and why children's rights advocates do not collaborate with the international pornography industry to develop standards and special labeling for films that make, quote, compassionate use of runaway teens. To do such things is to introduce moral ambiguity into situations where the boundaries between right and wrong must never be allowed to blur. To be the agent of such blurring is to become complicit oneself in the violence and abuse," end quote.
Yeah, words have power. And, you know, part of what you said just there reminded me of, you know, compassionate conservatism. It's anything but compassionate.
Yeah, yeah.
All the Bush-era waterboarding and torture was not labeled torture by the government, and they got lots of fancy lawyers so that they didn't have to call it torture, because then it's slightly better. So, you know, if it's happy, humane meat with, you know, then it's not just slaughter because I'm hungry and I want a hamburger and it tastes good.
Yeah, and actually, Levesque wrote the essay that that I drew this quote from. Part of his research involved looking at the American Psychology Association that had actually banded together and put out a statement saying that there is a bright line between complicity with torture and avoiding it, and that ethically psychologists should not be asked to cross that line,
right?
Which indeed they did, right?
I mean,
when they looked into the reports that were done on and who was doing some of the waterboarding, it was trained psychologists,
right?
So anyway, any other statements on this?
I don't think so.
All right. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KCFR 90.1 FM. Listener-supported community radio, and you can use the tip jar button on the KZFR.org website if you want to chip in and help this radio station stay on air. We've been talking about the current issue of the Chico News and Review. That's their farm-to-table issue. I'm going to send it over to Danny Toms. What else could the News and Review have covered instead of three ranchers and a butcher?
Probably a lot of things. We could have talked about alternative proteins, you know, various things. But we're going to talk about veganic farming, and we're going to tell you a little bit about what the heck that means. So the July 21st, 2017 issue of the San Francisco Chronicle ran a great article on a new generation of animal activists who are working on the next step to reform the modern farm. and I'm going to interject here too, and that, like, what are modern farming practices, right? They probably go back 50, 60 years. You know, there's nothing is really that static in farming. So some of the cries to pastoralism about this is how we've always done it is just false. It hasn't happened for that long. But on with the article, these new activists are not content just improving welfare on the farm. They want to move animals out of the farms altogether, which is a daring proposition considering the economic power of the U.S. animal industry, with beef industry alone worth $76 billion and dairy clocking in at $35 billion, according to the USDA. This stance puts them at odds with all these mainstream movements that work at improving animal welfare, such as locavore, organic food community, and things we just talked about. To many vegans, the sustainable food movement and its, quote, family-owned meat and dairy farms, such as the ones just featured, shield the cruelty of farming by making meat fashionable and righteous, and basically salving your consciences. Nassim Nobari of San Francisco is the executive director of Seed the Commons, an organization that holds workshops on veganic farming, a subset of organic agriculture that subtracts the animal inputs, such as manure or fish fertilizer. Veganic farming offers a way of sustaining ourselves without contributing to the death of other creatures and sentient beings. The bulk of the modern food movement, including organic, defaults to and plays on this mythical vision of agriculture that looks like, you know, old McDonald's farm. Nobari, a longtime vegan, says that people think if they're buying the right kind of meat, i.e. local meat, they're helping to build the sustainable food movement. And we've talked a lot about how it's not sustainable. But Nobari remembers when people who were environmentalists used to be vegetarian. I think a lot of us have that experience. We have an example of that right here in Chico. Chico Natural Foods started out as a vegetarian co-op way back in the 70s, but around 2008, they changed their charter and their mission and started carrying meat, first in one little corner, then in another corner, and now it's intermixed everywhere. Luckily, young vegan activists are doing the work that true environmentalists should be doing, figuring out how to eliminate the need for animal inputs. This is called veganic or stock-free farming, and the Lazy Millennial Farm in Salinas is working to perfect it. Founded by Matthew and Brittany Loisel, two young vegans who gave up corporate jobs to go back to the land, the Lazy Millennial Farm uses vegetable compost and, quote, green manure, otherwise known as cover crops, to enrich the soil rather than manure, blood, and bone meal and other animal products that the typical organic farm depends on for fertilizer, which is one reason they're not sustainable, because you couldn't have enough blood in the world to make all farms organic in that way. Veganic farming is not as easy as buying a bag of fertilizer at the store. Veganic farming requires a time and energy investment to get it going. It can be a little more difficult in the early years because you're basically taking unconditioned soil and building it up. But as time goes on, plant-based fertilizers break down and they release nutrients more slowly than organic fertilizers, which are often based on fish ingredients, probably bycatch and all the other issues we've talked about with mass fishing. And they break down much more slowly than chemical fertilizers, which release nutrients so quickly that it runs off into the water supply and causes nitrogen and phosphorus issues. The relative inefficiency of animal agriculture is the leading reason that companies are developing modern meat and dairy replacements, such as Redwood City's Impossible Foods and San Francisco's Hampton Creek, both of which have made quite significant inroads into mainstream markets with their mayonnaise and their burgers. On the fresh produce side of things, operations like the Millennial Farm is forging way. So their agricultural practices encompass all of the principles of organic certification, but they go beyond the USDA requirements. They don't use any animal byproducts, manure, blood meal, bone meal, feather, fish emulsion.
Amazing guts, how many hair, animals go into
et cetera.
Into the soil.
They use no broad spectrum pesticides. They also have a plan to decrease their off-farm sources of fertility from one year to the next, meaning to depend less on even external vegan inputs.
Right.
The Lazy Millennial CSA costs about $30 per week, which is not bad. And it was nice to see that they have an option for buying an extra share that the farm will donate to someone in need. And this week's bag had onions, corn, lettuce, kohlrabi, herbs, and, of course, no suffering. So what are the other advantages to society of veganic agriculture? As we've talked about before, animal agriculture is a significant contributor to greenhouse gases, and just leading cause of just environmental damage in many different ways, which is why, you know, we do have the harsh words sometimes for these localvore approaches, because they're terrible for the environment if they scale up. According to the Environmental Working Group, 1 pound of beef results in 13 pounds of CO2 production, whereas the vegetable that produces the most CO2 is the potato, which only creates 1.3 pounds of CO2 per pound of potato, which is great because I like potatoes.
And, you know, potatoes have everything you need. I mean, you may not want to survive on potatoes 24/7, but you could. And right. I'm not suggesting anybody do that.
Yeah, don't do the potato diet. But
no, don't do that.
Work them in. So, you know, we would have loved to have seen some of that also covered in this article in the News and Review or sometime soon.
So I just think that, you know, what this issue covered could have been so much better than just focusing on animal products.
Yeah.
You know, plus we have so many great produce farmers in this area. And I was just deeply, deeply disappointed. So.
Right. I mean, there wasn't even anything about, there was a bit touched on the produce farmers, but nothing produce specific.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll go ahead and move on just to a couple of calendar events, and then we'll wrap up the show. Tomorrow night, Plant-Based Chico is having a meeting from 6 to 9 p.m., and they're going to introduce folks on how to live a plant-based diet, how to cook, what to eat, and resources to use. And that'll be tomorrow, Thursday, July 27th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Chico Guild Hall on 2775 Nord Avenue. That's off of West East Avenue. And they'll be meeting from 6 to 9 p.m. And then we also have, coming up August 10th, next month, I just want to point out, there'll be a great speaker named Robert Grillo, who is the director of a Chicago-based nonprofit called Free From Harm. And he will be talking about his recently published book, Farm to Fable, The Fictions of Our Animal-Consuming Culture.
What?
And he'll be giving a talk on animal activism. And he'll be talking about how the animal rights community, where there's a few major organizations that are primary influencers, and society at large intersect. And he actually labels society at large as the animal-consuming culture. And he'll talk about how those interact and how we can push the society at large to being more vegan-friendly. And then also that weekend, August 12th, will be the Sonoma County Veg Fest, which I know it's a four-hour drive to get there, but it's a nice veg fest. They have good speakers. Actually, there's Robert Grillo will be speaking there, too. And they have great food samples, and it's a fun day. And then I just want to say there's a little help wanted here. If you're looking for a full-time job, Animal Place Sanctuary in Grass Valley is looking for a full-time animal caregiver with optional housing, which that's not to be overlooked. And you'll be helping take care of more than 200 animals. That includes pigs, chickens, cows, turkeys, and sheep at the sanctuary under the supervision of the animal care director. So, yeah, check out the animalplace.org website and go to their Get Involved section, and you can get some more information on that. We have one last bit of business to take care of, and that's the Animal Rights Quote of the Week. Take it away, Danny.
The Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from the great soul Mahatma Gandhi. A principle is a principle, and in no case can it be watered down because our incapacity to live it in practice. We have to strive to achieve it, and the striving should be conscious, deliberate, and hard.
So don't take the easy way out and accept little salves for your conscience.
I have principles, but some things taste so good I have to kill for them. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand for her engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for our Sue's awesome show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of this show where you want to listen over and over again, go to the archives at KZFR.org. This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.